Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
The Hargan women seemed to have it all.
We were blessed. My mom was amazing.
But detectives would soon discover...
Inside the house, there were the bodies of two women.
A story of betrayal you would struggle to believe if it wasn't true.
I am just praying to God, this is a sick joke.
From 48 Hours, this is Blood is Thicker, The Hargan Family Killings. Listen to Blood is Thicker, The Hargan Family Killings, wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome, everyone, to The New Era. What is that sound? What is going on? Okay, The New Era is starting off with a little bit of construction, okay? There's, you know, we got to clean out the White House, we got to do some executive orders and everything. I don't know what that was. But anyway, welcome for you to be here. Like, I'm glad that you're here. I'm glad that I'm here. I'm glad that Jared Jackson is here on a Thursday. What? In this economy?
This is crazy. I mean, you know what? You never know what's going to happen. Apparently, it's now Big News Thursday. I will not start tweeting hashtag JR Thursday because that just isn't right. Not going to go for it. I do want to say one thing.
And it's not okay.
I'm going to make it anyway. I just want to say really fast, because yesterday I tweeted that Cenk was filling in and he better live up to the hype and all that stuff. And people, some people get a little vicious, man. I'm joking every time I tweet about Cenk. Every time I tweet about Cenk and joke and I talk trash because it's fun, because Cenk is fun to talk trash about.
Yes.
Some, I'd say 5% of folks are like, yeah, F that Uyghur guy. You're right, JR. He's a piece of garbage. I was like, woo. Oh,
what have I done? Yeah, if I tweet anything like that, I'm not seriously attacking my coworkers as a general rule. I like them. Like, we've managed to keep the good people. So anyway, but thank you for being here. Look, it's gotta be a big news day because you're here, and I would argue pretty big news day. That probably for the first 20 to 30 minutes of the show, we have like a lot of bits of good news. It's weird. I feel a little bit uncomfortable, honestly. It's like a whole lot of things that are good. I don't know how we're gonna process it. But don't worry, it's still America. We got bad stuff coming down the pike. But we're also gonna catch up a little bit on the inaugural day. You know, we did TDR yesterday, but then there was a whole bunch of stuff that happened after that we missed out on. So we want to comment on a little bit of what's been going on, mostly around memes. So we're gonna have some fun with that. I can see over on Twitch, we've got the new Bernie meme is an emoji. I was so pleased when I saw that. Bart and Brooke are very fast on generating those. But we're also gonna check in on how the right wing has responded to the inauguration day with something I'm calling the Wacko Roundup. So that should be fun. And it will feature one form of wackiness that I didn't expect, which is a very prominent news commentator giving an incredibly, incredibly horny monologue. So that'll be fun. And then we've got Ted Cruz. Thankfully, it's not him. It's not Ted Cruz with the horny monologue. But anyway, JR, why don't we launch into this thing in a sec? Thank you, everybody, for being here. Please hit the like button and share the stream if you haven't already. And as we go through this, we're gonna be reading your super chats and comments and tweets and things like that. So please send those in. I especially like, I like reading them every day, but we're launching into a new thing. We've had some good time, and so I'm curious how everybody is experiencing that. We've had a lot of bad days. Let's see what a good day feels like. And with that, let's launch into that good day. In the run-up to the inauguration, Biden had promised that on his first day, he was gonna do a whole mess of stuff. And he did a whole mess of stuff, actually. We had had a memo from Ron Klain, the White House chief of staff, saying that Biden's plans to tackle four overlapping and compounding crises, COVID-19, the economy, global warming, and racial justice. And we have actions on quite a few of these, actually. So we're gonna start off with climate change because it's my show and I get to. So among the most immediate steps, one of the first things he did was rejoining the Paris climate agreement, which he had said that he was going to do. By re-entering the agreement, Biden is recommitting the US to drastically reducing emissions in order to limit average global temperature rise to below 2 degrees Celsius. So that's good, I think. JR getting back in the Paris Climate Accords. He said he'd do it. He can do it immediately. There was no excuse not to.
Yeah, so I think that, you know, as far as this litany of lib policies that he pushed through on the first day, it's okay to start with that one. I think it's okay to start with the Paris Climate Accord. And I'm sure we'll have some fallout from that, but I'm on board so far.
We do have some fallout from some people who have objections to being in the Paris Climate Accord that are founded in intellectual honesty, coming from Ted Cruz. Who says, by rejoining the Paris Climate Agreement, President Biden indicates he's more interested in the views of the citizens of Paris than in the jobs of the citizens of Pittsburgh. This agreement will do little to affect the climate and will harm the livelihoods of Americans. Well, if it's gonna do little, then how much harm could it do? But anyway, so the Paris Climate Accord means he cares more about the people of Paris than of America. Or specifically, he said Pittsburgh, which I think is funny. Because Pittsburgh's in Pennsylvania and Ted Cruz just tried to overturn the results of the election in Pennsylvania. So if that's caring about them, maybe some not caring is a nice way to mix it up.
Yeah, okay, so this is a play on words and trying to appeal to real Americans who care about Pittsburgh and don't care about Paris, that lib city, when they know nothing about Paris. So now it's going back to the empty talking points that just hit some trigger words. Pittsburgh, not Paris. Oh, it's alliteration too, Ted. So again, this is a big illustration of exactly what they think of their supporters. He thinks this is gonna work. If people don't have to know anything about the Paris Climate Accord, have to know nothing about the fact once Trump left it, what that meant, or what it means for us to get back in it. It just means Pittsburgh versus Paris, America versus France, French fries versus chips. These guys are the worst. This is what we're back to debating about. Nothing with any facts, nothing with any basis of anything. But this guy is gonna bring up Paris versus Pittsburgh like it's a football game against with the Browns versus the Steelers or something. It's insane, but here we are again.
And it's nonsense and it's not even good. This is like a Marco Rubio tweet where it's like, no, you fundamentally don't get this, do you? But you know who does get it? Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who like in the same way that Greta Thunberg is always ready to snipe Trump, I feel like AOC is keeping an eye on Ted Cruz. So she responded to that tweet saying, nice tweet, Senator Cruz. Quick question, do you also believe the Geneva Convention was about the views of the citizens of Geneva? Asking for everyone who believes US senators should be competent and not undermine our elections to incite insurrection against the United States. That's just boom, boom. Hitting him on multiple things. It's like, oh, you're dumb and also you're anti-democratic. The joke is a little bit on us because he's still a senator and is likely to remain one, but it's good having people like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez there. God, I wish she was also a senator. Like I wish he could like give his stupid speeches on the House floor with his Dr. Seuss books and then she could immediately go and speak directly after. How good is that gonna feel when she takes out Chuck Schumer? Oh.
Oh man, John, you're talking big futures here that she's openly denied, John. She's openly denied these situations that you're saying is gonna happen with Schumer.
But to her
tweet, I do enjoy it because it seems like maybe there's someone who's like a Cruz monitor and then they text AOC and go, hey, check out what Cruz just said. And then she has a chance to respond. Someone's one job.
Google alert. I think she has a Google alert there.
Yeah.
I also saw we have a Twitch comment from Map with Stormy Dragon who says, oh, Greta sniped back at Cruz too. Who do you think I am? You think I don't have that? So Greta Thunberg then tweeted, so happy that USA has finally rejoined the Pittsburgh Agreement. Welcome back. Oh God,
Greta Thunberg is on these things like, you know, as if it's her job. But again, I wonder how closely she's monitoring the ridiculousness. And if it's someone is letting her know, because again, she's 17 now, 16, 17, I can't remember.
Something like that, probably.
And imagine myself at 16, 17 years old, I had no interest in doing any of this. The type of things that she's following and doing. So again, she's staying true to what she's looking to do. It's about the Paris Climate Accord that she's trying to demonize folks on and throw some scare tactics because Paris is a scary place. So I like that, again, the people who've been fighting for these actual events and things that we need to actually do to change, stick with it. Because the frustrating part is a lot of times we kind of forget and move on. Yeah. Greta Thunberg was this big deal and then we just stopped talking about her and what she's doing and saying. I'm glad we're not.
Yeah, totally. So with Biden re-entering the Paris Climate Agreement, Biden will have to quickly submit a new 2030 emissions target under it called a nationally determined contribution, which will reveal the level of ambition the new administration will bring to the monumental task of decarbonizing the US economy over the next decade. So if the idea is going to be that you're going to, everybody has to contribute, all the countries that are party to it, to make sure that the average overall increase in the temperature is kept below a certain cap, we need to know how much are you gonna actually do. And that is where the rubber is gonna meet the road. It is one thing to join the accord, but as a lot of great environmental activists have pointed out, including Greta Thunberg, joining it does not mean you're doing what you need to do to even meet its goals, let alone the more ambitious goals that'll be required for like an outcome that isn't just not apocalyptic, but also not really, 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 really bad, which this in theory would still leave us with. So yeah, to give you an idea, a recent Princeton energy modeling study found that the ultimate goal of reaching net zero emissions by 2050 is feasible, but it will require $2.5 trillion of investment in a new infrastructure over the next decade. So to put that in perspective, one Trump tax cut for the richest people in America, basically. That sounds doable over the next decade, I think, if we space it out a little bit. But to give an idea, it is going to be a big thing. And that is not something that Biden can just do with an executive order. That's gonna require legislation. That's gonna require, hypothetically, eliminating the filibuster, which I'm sure is something that we will talk about in the near future. But it's important. There's a case to be made. It's the most important thing that we could possibly do over the next 10 years.
Yeah, let's think about it. Also, again, you said they could get to this point by 2050. There's a plan to get there by a certain degree by 2030. That is gonna require continuing to elect folks that are looking to get this done, right? So I worry, and I hope my worries are unfounded, that now that Trump is out of office, has officially left, even though after he lost the election, still wasn't going to leave in many people's minds, has officially left, we have a new president, that now we don't become, it's all done, Biden's here, it's all over. Don't have to think about that, these political things anymore that happen in our country. Let's just move on, and you go back to Republicans winning more elections and coming in and undoing exactly what maybe gets begun here. And then we get nowhere again. Now let's not forget, it's not like when we were not ever in the Paris Climate Agreement, Trump took us out of it. But before that, it's not like climate change or our approach to it was not a problem. So we were in the Paris Climate Agreement, but it's not like everything was great. You know, we still weren't doing enough. Totally. So just getting back in the Paris Climate Agreement isn't the end. It's we have to do more, because where we were wasn't good enough. Now we're just worse.
Yeah. Now, re-entering the Paris Climate Accord isn't the only thing on the environment or fight against climate change that was accomplished in the first day. One executive order covers a broad range of policies, including methane regulations, energy efficiency standards for appliances, fuel efficiency standards for cars, and blocking the Keystone XL pipeline and drilling in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. So not all of those are done. One of the big executive orders, for instance, requires a review of literally every environmental deregulation that Trump did during his 4 years. And that is a lot, because there was more than 100 of them. Some of them significant, like reversing Obama's methane regulations, for instance. But we are on the right path on these. And just understand that one, can we put up that graphic one more time right there? We did a lot of videos over the last 4 years about those topics. And with one graphic, arguably the executive order was the more important part. But I'm gonna give credit to the one graphic. We're reversing a lot of that damage, or at least putting ourselves on the path to reverse it. And not for small things. Blocking the Keystone XL pipeline, how much time and energy was put into that over the past 5-6 years or so? Reprotecting the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. That was one of the things Trump did relatively recently, was putting that at risk. So this is a lot there. It is not, it's not getting us net zero by 2050. It's not the Green New Deal. It's not what Sunrise wants. It is far short of all of those, but it is at least a first pass at indicating that this is something that is going to be prioritized.
Yeah, that's a good start. Again, it's been one day. So
yeah.
Everyone wondering how soon we're gonna hold the Biden administration's feet to the fire. Let's at least, you know, let's at least see what they're presenting, you know, as they're starting. And then there's plenty of things that we can talk about that they're doing or not doing.
Yeah, totally. And with that, why don't we move on to another area? One of the areas we expected a lot of action on the first day from Joe Biden was going to be on immigration, and we have that. Joe Biden passed multiple executive orders targeting some of the worst excesses of the Trump administration when it comes to immigration. We have the Department of Homeland Security announcing just last night that it would pause deportations of certain non-citizens for 100 days starting on January 22nd, delivering on one of President Joe Biden's key campaign promises on immigration policy. According to a memo, the moratorium will apply to any non-citizen in the US who has been ordered deported by an immigration judge unless they arrived after November 1st of last year, or if they voluntarily gave up their right to stay in the US with full knowledge of the consequences and the opportunity to obtain legal representation. So that's just a hold. And we know that, you know, when Biden was vice president, Barack Obama's actions on immigration weren't always anything close to what we wanted them to be. But this was a promise. It is one that he is doing. He's doing it instantly. And so that's a good sign, in addition to a number of other things, which we'll turn to in a second.
Hopefully, this will be one of the points, because I think every president, especially someone like Biden, who was once a vice president, wants to forge their own, if you want to, I hate using the term legacy, but forge their own agenda in this case and not look like, because I think a lot of people will expect, and maybe some of the excitement from some Democrats for Joe Biden getting elected was, oh yeah, that was President Obama's vice president. Maybe we'll get some of those passes, people that liked Obama. But Joe Biden or people around Joe Biden probably don't want to be Obama number two. They don't want that type of thing. So hopefully things like this will be something he can differentiate himself on as his approach to immigration, doing maybe hopefully doing things that that Obama wasn't willing to do.
Exactly. So let's see, we've got, I think we can skip past the next graphic. Let's move on to some other changes. The Biden administration announced that starting Thursday, it will no longer enroll asylum seekers newly arriving on the southern border in a Trump era program that has forced tens of thousands, close to 70,000 individuals to wait in Mexico for a chance to obtain protection in the United States. Before the pandemic, asylum seekers would often have to wait months for a hearing. And so you saw camps springing up on the other side of the border, massive exploitation, violence, sexual violence, those sorts of things. And it's very easy to argue that that was the point of it in the first place, that Trump didn't want these people coming in. He wanted them to be scared of potentially being raped or murdered or robbed while waiting for a chance to talk to an asylum judge. That is now going to end. And so that's another good move.
So the question then becomes, I have to read deeper, I suppose, but then what happens? You know, there's folks that they had being held there, but the idea was to have a better place or a safer, secure situation
inside of the United States.
Yeah, and then that starts with this hold and this pause is for him to get the opportunity to figure that out. Because again, it's been a day. How do you figure out such a massive a policy or a plan to go forward, honestly, to help out all these human beings that we in the past 4 years have forgotten our humans and what we do in the meantime. And because there's always going to be potentially something bad happening, especially as people are trekking across multiple countries to get somewhere, and there's bad folks out there. So that'll still be happening. It's just a matter of how we use it. As you mentioned, the Trump administration used it in a way to fearmonger both Americans and folks that were potentially trying to get away from really bad situations in other countries. So as long as we shore that up and hopefully get some kind of a coherent thought process, and maybe we can do something better.
Yeah.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called Unfucking the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of Unfucking the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, "You must unlearn what you have learned." And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Yeah, but I want to make sure that we mention a few others. So here's the weird thing about today. Any one of these things is something that Trump would have rolled out. We would have been rightfully horrified by. We would have covered. Activists would have rallied against it. Efforts to overturn it would have happened. This is the power of winning elections. Biden is doing tons of good little things. They're not the biggest, most like the huge structural changes to fix things like enduring economic inequality, racial bias, and criminal justice. Like those sorts of things are bigger, and that's what we're gonna have to continue to fight on. But right. For instance, the fact that I can just say, oh, by the way, he ended the Muslim ban. He did. That was a thing that we talked endlessly about. Mm-hmm. That's done. For instance, that Biden is ending the Trump census policy, ensuring that all persons living in the US are counted. Because remember, Trump wanted to just not count immigrants. He wasn't allowed to not count immigrants. But if he had gotten reelected, are you sure that he wouldn't have been able to stop that and steal more political representation? That's one graphic. Here's another one. He stopped construction of the border wall with Mexico. Just immediately is terminating those contracts. That's a big thing, a massive xenophobic waste of money. Again, we do have to be on the watch because in terms of like wanting to emphasize the need for more border security, that is not a thing that has been exclusively Trump or exclusively Republican. Democratic politicians, both administrations like Obama and Biden's, as well as currently serving senators and representatives on the Democratic side, think that we need fences and things like that. So we need to keep our guard up for things like this. But a lot happened yesterday, just yesterday, on some of these areas, and we can take a few moments out to appreciate that.
I think so, but why not? You know, it doesn't, to acknowledge and notice something, it doesn't change the fact that you can still keep an eye out and see how things are going. What else is there to say? I can't believe he did these things that we didn't like that Trump did. He undid some of Trump's policies that we were vehemently against. 2 + 2 = 4. Yeah, I'm glad he is on the path to reverse these things. We'll see where it goes.
Yep, 100%. Yeah. And where it goes to next is another area, one of those things that Ron Klain was talking about. Undoubtedly, one of the biggest crises facing Biden as he becomes president is the pandemic, which not only still exists, and I hope that it has become needless that I keep saying that. And I hope that everyone watching this is more aware of it than your average American, many of whom have moved on. But I want to remind you that yesterday was a historic day for a number of different reasons. You have Kamala Harris being sworn in, obviously that is massive history. Joe Biden taking over is very big as well. It was also a record-breaking day in terms of the number of Americans reported dead from COVID, because we had over 4,400 deaths reported on Inauguration Day.
Jeez.
Which is just devastating, way beyond a 9/11. Just yesterday, nobody was even paying attention. I understand it. The inauguration was going on, but that happened. Thousands of families lost a family member. Many thousands more have people who've been admitted to the hospital and all of that. And it's not to say that there's not any good news in those numbers. The cases seem to be going down, albeit slowly. The hospitalizations seem to be flat or going down, albeit slowly. Those are positive signs, but they're positive signs happening during literally the darkest period of the pandemic. And I think we can all agree that very, very few people in America, very few media outlets in America are treating this as the darkest moment in the pandemic. A case could be made that they're not treating it like it's, you know, in the top five worst months. But it is. And so it's important that Biden prioritizes that.
Yeah, I'm glad he is too. And we'll see how fast this transition for this happens, if and how he can pull this off. But the plan being in place is just something different. And we talked about I'm not sure if we're getting to this, but the at least I didn't see we did. The vaccine rollout, how the Biden administration is walking into a zero plan. So there's hurdles that are put in place, and it's just a matter of figuring out the best approach to undoing so much turmoil and so much incompetence in one term. It's gonna be mind blowing, and I think they're gonna continue to slowly find out just how bad it is.
Yeah. Wow. Assuming these numbers are right from Carbon and our Twitch, it's almost exactly the number of Allied deaths on D-Day. Yeah. I'm not an expert on World War II, but that sounds right. And geez. It's still there. Like, let's say that Biden is successful in the pandemic. We are still going to lose tens of thousands of people, 100,000 people.
And pay attention, for every now thousands of people that died per day, We'll see how soon, potentially, the pundits, the Trumpers, maybe other Republicans, actual elect officials will begin to say, look at what's happening with the pandemic under this Democratic administration. When for the past year, they've been like, well, you know, it's not that bad. I mean, the president really downplay anything. I mean, you know, I mean, injecting in Lysol into your system. I mean, he was just joking. All that stuff, suddenly it's gonna be like, suddenly now they're gonna take it seriously. And maybe, you know what?
Good.
Maybe that's a good turn for the better, because now they'll start taking it seriously, because that's politically motivating for them to take it seriously, and maybe hopefully tell their idiot constituents to start doing the right thing.
Exactly. Sean Hannity on his radio show was like, Biden said he was gonna fix a pandemic in one day, on day one. Now he's saying it's gonna take months. I guarantee he didn't say it was gonna be done in one day. Anyway,
Joe Biden said he's gonna resurrect the 400,000 Americans that have been have been victim to COVID. Can't believe he hasn't done it yet.
Jeez. So what is he gonna do? Well, Biden had quite a bit in terms of the pandemic on his first day. Starting with the bad news, the incoming administration let us know that they're inheriting a non-existent coronavirus vaccine distribution plan, and they're gonna have to start from scratch. I mean, who's really surprised by that? It was a massive disaster. Where they effectively said, as they've said for most aspects of the pandemic for the past 6 months at least, the states do it. That's basically what it was. And what do you know? It was a disaster in multiple states, and vaccine stores have run out. Well, why wouldn't it? You're not doing anything to make sure that we're producing enough. So anyway, it's a massive disaster, but we do have some action. Mr. Biden signed an executive order appointing Jeffrey Zients as the official COVID-19 response coordinator, who will report to the president. In an effort to aggressively gear up the nation's response to the pandemic, the order also restores the Directorate for Global Health Security and Biodefense of the National Security Council, a group Mr. Trump had disbanded, in which, you know, just looking forward, I'm assuming President Carlson will disband in right before COVID-26 gets us. But anyway, it's a fun cycle of American politics here. Let's see, we also have Biden reinstating ties with the World Health Organization, because remember when the president cut off ties with the WHO during the worst global pandemic in a century? That was a goof. Oh. Anyway, we're gonna be back with them, so that's good. We have a little bit more JR, but so far, what do you think?
Weird, a global pandemic, staying involved with the World Health Organization to make sure that there's a coordinated response to this global pandemic that spreads across international lines. Crazy how that works, but I'm glad we're back to elementary style logic.
Exactly. And remember, it wasn't just like the WHO he cut us off from. He also continually attacked the CDC.
Yeah.
And somehow hundreds of thousands of people died.
If we go back and think about the things we just went through for the past 4 years, we're gonna be like, that really did happen.
That did happen. Sharpie, it happened. Jank and I were disagreeing a little bit on Twitter about who in the end was worse. Was it Trump or was it George W. Bush? We should have an event. We should have an hour long debate, multiple people on each side actually trying to hash out our initial view. You know, in 5 years, we'll look back with a little bit more perspective, but who is actually worse? But anyway, really fast, the issue with the pandemic isn't just the immediate public health crisis, although that is terrible. We also have the economic damage that it's doing to a lot of people, because they either can't work, their jobs have been lost, a number of issues like that. Mr. Biden is, in response to that, moving to extend a federal moratorium on evictions, and has asked agencies, including the Agricultural, Veterans Affairs, and Housing and Urban Development departments, to prolong a moratorium on foreclosures on federally guaranteed mortgages that was enacted in response to the coronavirus pandemic. The extensions all run through at least the end of March. And in addition to that, the president is also moving to continue a pause on federal student loan interest and principal payments through the end of September. Although progressive groups and some congressional Democrats have pushed Mr. Biden to go much further and cancel up to $50,000 in student debt per person. And just to put it in perspective, saying some have pushed for it, you might think, oh, what did Ilhan Omar push for? No, Chuck Schumer said he should cancel $50,000. So if he doesn't, and he doesn't seem to want to, like, that's a fairly extreme position in comparison to the Democratic caucus. If you got Schumer pushing for it, it ain't radical anymore, even in the way the establishment throws that term around.
Not radical anymore, John, but what about people, I mean, I paid off my $50,000. Why would you guys take away anyone else's $50,000 student debt? That's not fair. In fact, I want my $50,000 back.
Well, as I said yesterday in the show, I paid off my student debt. And you know who's in favor of it? This guy. let's cancel it. Like, it's crazy.
How dare you?
Like, if you admit, if you say, and people tweet, like, I'm going to tweet later today, we should cancel all student loan debt. And I'm going to get some, I almost swore, some person is going to say, well, I already paid off mine. That to me is like tweeting, like, I love the feeling when your foot contacts the soft belly of a puppy. Like, what's wrong with you that you'd publicly admit, like, okay, you can have this horrible position and maybe feel a little bit of shame about what an awful, selfish person you are. But to like hold it up as like a symbol of how awesome you are is sick.
Yeah, it's so weird. But no, that's the basis for why we can continue to push our capitalistic approach to put people in the dirt in order for you to just stand on top of that mound of dirt and still have nothing. So all you have left on your hand is this dirt that you buried someone else with, but you still have nothing either. So as long as we keep having this fighting amongst ourselves from people who all deserve some kind of an equal footing to get somewhere in this country, as long as we keep having this fight, they can continue to do this to us. So you can complain about, oh, what about them? Instead of being like, okay, where do we go from here to help my life? I paid off my $50,000. Now what can I do? How can I benefit because of this change for everyone else? It's supposed to help everybody. It's a thing called a country. We work together to get further.
Exactly. Oh, by the way, I'm gonna throw one last one out there. So you remember how like maybe the only thing Trump did to drain the swamp was a federal ban for a period of time on lobbying after leaving the administration. And it was literally like on the way out, like he grabbed his bag, he put on his hat, and then he canceled that regulation. Like it was so see-through, you con man. Anyway, but you're not president anymore. And so Biden reinstated it. So the joke's on you, kind of. And so that's good. And there's other stuff too, like go do some reading. We can't summarize literally everything, but that's a lot for day one. It's not, my day one would have looked different. I'm imagining Jared's would have looked different than mine. You can fill in the blanks however you want, but that's a lot. That's better than any day of Trump being president.
Well, again, starting from the starting point, we can see what we can get from here, but I'm trying not to get too in the, oh yeah, he's done so many, you know, we'll see
what happens.
I want to play it even. And I don't expect necessarily horrible things to happen either. Honestly, actually, I'm pretty optimistic. Actually, and I will be disappointed if we have to win, because I think it'll happen. But when we have to call out some of the things that he isn't doing correctly, because this is going to be that way, because everyone is, there's always gray area, there's always a different route you can take. And I think he's super progressive, so we'll find it.
Yep, and my hope is that Kamala Harris, who definitely wants to run for president, I am hoping that she is savvy enough to actually use these 4 years to push for progressive wins that she can run on. I think that it goes kind of against her actual politics, but I am hoping that she at least has the self-interest to push for that. So we will see. And by the way, as we close out this happy half hour, that was a half an hour on the damage report of good news. Weird. Anyway, I will also say, and this is sort of piggybacking off of what JR said, we'll talk more about this and more formally. I have no interest in becoming a cheerleader for the Biden administration. Like I can think of like one or two that I would probably end up kind of being a cheerleader for, and he ain't it. He ain't in that group. So we're gonna talk about the good news. We're not gonna be one of those, you know, left channels that is gonna pretend that none of that happened or matters, because that's crazy. But at the same time, we are gonna hold him accountable. And when he doesn't deliver on things, including things that we talked about in this segment, desires that we have, we're going to criticize him. And so some of you in the audience might get uncomfortable by that. And in the end, we will probably end up losing some of our audience when we go back to, as TYT did, when it went from Bush to Obama. And then TYT decided, oh no, we're still gonna criticize the president. TYT got attacked a ton during the Obama years for being critical of a Democratic president. So we're gonna experience that too. Thank you for watching while you did. if you end up leaving us because we're critical of a Democrat, but it's gonna happen.
And it's not just to strictly be critical of a Democrat for the sake of being critical. It's based on policies that they said they would carry out that they maybe didn't or won't. It's based off of a fight or allowing Republicans to take over that fight and then carry that narrative or push you in a certain way when you can easily get pushed in the correct way by other folks who are speaking out. So it's based on things that actually would help the country if they don't follow through on those things, or if they promise it and it's supposed to go that way, or if what they're proposing just isn't working and we're like, hey, try this because we told you that didn't work with other folks. You know, we'll see what those policies are, but it's not just based on the fact to do it to do it. It's based in real reason, because when Obama did something right, we said so then too. It's just the way it's gonna be.
Awesome. So we had been warned about a great deal of potential violence or chaos, or at least demonstrations on Inauguration Day. It was something we here at The Damage were worried about. Although we did say in advance, there's the possibility that like on Election Day, it won't actually materialize. The FBI issued warnings last week that it had intel about armed protests at the Capitol buildings in all 50 states. Police were mobilized, National Guard was mobilized, and all of that. Remember, we had heard that tens of thousands of armed individuals were gonna go to DC specifically. I'm imagining once they heard there would be 20,000 National Guard troops, that took the wind out of the old sails a little bit. But not just in DC, because not only have there been no incidents of violence at state capitals as of Wednesday late, but at many of them, the number of MAGA protesters could be counted on one hand. And I wanna show you some examples. So here you have the New York State Capitol, Mark Lagero is the only one. It is not often that we can read all the names of all of the people at the protest, but we just did. Drove 45 minutes. That sucks. Let's see, Jefferson City, we have a handful of people, five or so. Not bad, not bad. Let's see, in North Carolina, we have a couple of people, and Biden's an imposter. I don't know if he means that colloquially or if he believes that a face-off situation is happening with someone else. I don't know. Here in Austin at the Texas Capitol building, we have a couple of people and a sign that says socialism is slavery. I love hearing about what other things are slavery from people that also undoubtedly believe that slavery wasn't that bad.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. There's more. But not a lot of people. There's other protests, but not a lot of people. So it didn't actually happen. What do you know?
Yeah, that's the good news. You're right. Good. And honestly, maybe it's the presence of an actual police force there where they made it clear that they're not gonna go through this again. And hey, maybe you shouldn't show up and try to get yourself arrested and put in pose in front of the cameras with you stealing things out of federal buildings. Maybe that was part of it. Maybe that was part of it. Or maybe the other part of it was, and this is me 100% speculating. If there's no violence, what are we here for? A peaceful protest. And what are we protesting? It's over. So the motivation behind it being that you can actually somehow get Trump back in office was their first one. And they believed that because he kept telling them. And then number two, and if it doesn't work, we can at least go shooting and hanging people and kidnapping them. That kind of did work out, but not fully. And so now that there was an actual response prepared for it, they're like, this is boring. Let's not show up to this.
Yeah, totally. And like, so you see like the huge number, by the way, people are mentioning that Sprocket's doing his tap dancing lessons. Anyway, adorable. And we totally have to have a Sprocket emoji for the chat soon. We're gonna work on that. But so they had 20,000 troops, which is obviously it was horrendous to see. It's obviously a great expense. Was it unnecessary? Or was it the thing that stopped something from happening? We don't know. The fact that stuff at the state capitals didn't really happen implies that maybe there wasn't really much to it, but we had just experienced 2 weeks before the attack on the Capitol. And so I'm glad that they erred on the side of security. And I have a hard time believing that all of those people who were willing to do what they did on the 6th are just gone and have repledged to a life of peaceful protest and acceptance of the other party winning the presidency.
Yeah,
so glad to have been wrong. And I love admitting that I'm wrong, but
It's similar to gun measures. And you know, after we have some kind of mass shooting, and then we'll put in these measures, but they say, oh, they keep happening. Well, they keep happening because we haven't done anything. And maybe the measures we have done, they say, look at these lib cities, and they've got these strict gun laws, and there still was a shooting there. Well, how many shootings were not there because of those strict gun laws? We don't know, because those shootings didn't happen, and that's good. So although we still have too many, because one is too many, putting in measures to take care of those problems, if they work, you won't see the exact results. You won't see the shooter come. Yeah, so I was planning on June 17th to go shoot up the mall, but you know what? They put in these regulations and actually took away my guns. I guess I can't do it anymore. See you later, MSNBC. Thanks for the interview. No, it's not gonna be that way. They're not gonna promote what they were trying to do and they were thwarted from doing. So it's, yeah, it's continue to do the right thing, and it will hopefully people now survive that potentially would have been victims.
Exactly, exactly. Now with that, let's turn to something from yesterday that was a little bit more fun than the sad lone Trumper outside the state capitol. Oh, how alone you must feel. Oh God.
No, my favorite part. Anyway. Sorry, John. My favorite part of that was one person said, I was kicked off of Facebook, so I showed up and I had no idea that we weren't doing it anymore because we communicate on Facebook to do these things. So in other words, these bans that everyone's complaining about are serving their purpose. Now, I'm assuming this guy would have participated in bad action. So that's my fault for making those assumptions, but I'm making it based off of what has happened in the very, very near past of what we just experienced a couple weeks ago. So I don't think it's that much of an assumption to make, but the fact that he was now lonely because he can't communicate with his fellow insurrectionists, sorry again to call him that, I think is a good move.
Yeah. Yeah, and by the way, in terms of him being taken off, like I know, again, whenever there's a conversation nationally about the First Amendment and free speech, it's about, hey, this powerful rich white man had consequences. People get taken off of Facebook and Twitter all the time for basically nothing. That is not new, by the way. And it's also not a part of these national conversations. But anyway, let's move on to other news, lighter news, fun news. That might not be on a lot of shows, but I like it, so whatevs. Here we go. There were a lot of people at the inauguration, but few generated as much social media attention as one Bernard Sanders, who showed up like this. Reezy notes that he's dressed like the inauguration is on his to-do list, but ain't his whole day. He's gotta go to the post office afterward. Come on, it could be a line. Like, he's gonna watch a little bit, but like he's got other stuff to do. But then he ended up sitting down, and you can see this tweet from Ashley K saying this could have been an email. It's totally true. He's sitting there with his "I'm once again asking you for financial support" jacket, and he's got his mask because, you know, he's not an a-hole, and he's got his mitts, which that Etsy store, which we'll talk about, is going to sell a billion of those, millions and billions of mitts. Uh-huh. And so that image is just gold. And that gold has been mined, generating images like here you see on one of the subway cars in New York. That doesn't even look like a Photoshop. That's just real. You have him once again asking you not to touch the artwork in this one. It's just too good. He's really been around though, and not just in urban centers, okay? He likes it in the wilderness too. He is from Vermont, so here he is observing Bigfoot. And there's one that I really wanted to do, but I was busy and lazy yesterday. But if I did one, it would be this, with him attending the Council of Elrond and not really liking their plan for destroying the ring. Probably it's because he's surrounded by members of the 1% of Middle Earth. These are all the ruling elite, basically, except for the hobbits, I guess. Shout out to the hobbits.
It's these types of things that make me wish I was creative enough and inventive enough to come up with my own. And those times that I do, I wouldn't be able to pull off the execution anyway, because I'm very remedial at Photoshop. But it's one of those things, maybe it's a New Year's resolution, because these are, I don't know, it's one of those things that can take up your brain space and is actually enjoyable for a minute. It's harmless, it's just fun. Everyone can have a good laugh at it. If you hate Bernie Sanders, it's still funny. If you love him, it's still funny.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah, I wanted to make that one. And then I saw someone put him on the bridge of the Enterprise from Star Trek. So I wanted to put him into Luke Skywalker's cockpit from Star Wars, but like, I was like, it's gonna take a lot of work. It's gonna take a lot. Like, if you wanna really like blow up on Twitter from one of these things, you gotta be on it. And like, yeah. I can't always be on it. I got stuff I gotta do. Totally. But anyway, I love it. And I wish I knew if Bernie knew that this existed. There's a very good chance that he doesn't.
He's
Although his wife
know.
Is pretty active on social media. She might have told him.
He's got to know.
Anyway, finally, let's give credit to one individual, Jen Ellis on Twitter, who apparently made Bernie's mittens as a gift a couple of years ago. They're made from repurposed wool sweaters and lined with fleece, made from recycled plastic bottles. So they are the Bernie Sanders of mitts. But you can see a lot there. And I believe she has an Etsy store. I'm sure that that information is of it. No?
No.
Okay, well, if not from her, there's gonna be replicas available soon. They're already making a bobblehead out of that image, by the way. I'm looking at
the Don't buy the replicas, go to the original. She did it.
Well, I don't know if she sells them, apparently.
Hopefully she'll start selling them, because things like that, they get promoted naturally and organically. That's the best way to go, because there's so much fakeness in online stuff and promotions and sales, as we already know. People can easily be like, hey, follow me here, and hey, buy my stuff here, and hey, you guys, do you know I'm here? And it's you can see the thirst in trying to get some kind of promotion. But if it happens naturally and organically, just like what was the place Giuliani went to where he had the press conference?
Total Landscaping. Four Seasons Total Landscaping and Hardware.
I don't know anything about who they are. Maybe they're bad people, but the free promotion I thought was great.
Yeah. Yeah, you want to at the very least have a SoundCloud ready to go for when your tweet blows up. Biden is now president, which if you were watching Newsmax, first of all, why? Second of all, they told you he wouldn't be. And so now they need to come to grips with this. And so we've got a bunch of videos of them admitting that they got it wrong. No, we don't. But we do have videos of them responding to the inauguration. So here's a Newsmax host. I have no idea who this is, and I'm not particularly interested in finding out, but he is on Newsmax. So here he is. Take a look at what issue he had with the inauguration.
Like a homily, a priest. Joe Biden may be Catholic, but he supports abortion and he can't pronounce Psalms. A priest is the last person I would compare him to. I don't think a priest would invite the Trump-hating Lady Gaga to sing either. For a man who is calling for unity, Biden calls on her to sing the national anthem. So it's not who we wanted to hear from. There is nothing in the national anthem that Joe Biden seems to value, yet the media love fest continues.
Okay, so remember that last bit, the media love fest continue, because we're gonna show you another video in a second. But first, he's not a real Catholic. He invited Lady Gaga. How dare he? We don't wanna hear from her. He doesn't respect the national anthem and he can't pronounce Psalms. So JR, is that a consistent position that if someone claims to be a Christian, but they have an issue with their religious knowledge, let alone the fact that dude's got a stutter and it's almost certainly what caused it. But anyway, that they would see through it. And that's a fake Christian. They'd identify it on Newsmax.
They've been going after fake Christians for years, you know, these conservatives. They want to make sure there's fake Christians that believe in death, destruction, mayhem, and leaving your fellow man to die in the street. You know, all those Christian values that they've been espousing for since forever. All those things that you know, now Joe Biden can't possibly come back from because he's a fake Catholic. You know, because if you say 2 Corinthians in front of Liberty University, that's not an indication that you don't know anything about the religion that you claim to have. If you're asked about which part of the Bible is your favorite, and you go, the whole thing. And you go, well, you know, Old Testament, New Testament. You go, the whole thing. I want to keep it to myself because, you know, it's a personal relationship I have with the Bible that I've never read a day in my life. You know, all those indications that someone's a fake Christian and they're actually manipulating Christians across the country to think that they're actually on their side. That guy's maybe the one you might want to hold his feet to the fire because he actually manipulated people that believe in Christian God that. That Donald Trump apparently used for his purposes. If you want to go that route, we can do it all day. But it doesn't matter. They're talking to the audience that has no interest in looking for those differences or those very easily debunked facts. It just doesn't matter.
Something else that he was going to wish didn't matter is the inconsistency between the way he ended that video, which is, and now the love fest of the media for Biden. We at Newsmax stand against news networks showing love for a politician. Blah, who wants that? And now more from Newsmax.
But folks, now it falls to us and He's been very inspirational. We now have to fight cancel culture, each and every one of us. We, each and every one of us, have to stand up for our constitutional rights. How do you feel about Joe Biden? He is the president of the United States. It's okay, ladies and gentlemen, to say you do not wish the president success. It is. Now, I wish him no harm, of course, and I want him to be happy and healthy in his life, but I wish Joe Biden no success. Fair enough. Joe Biden jumped the gun a little bit today. He got sworn in at 10 minutes to noon. I don't mean to nitpick, but does say noon according to the law. But anyway.
Yeah, I don't mean to nitpick, but I'm kind of a petty a-hole, so I'm gonna. I don't want to be like a jackass, but like I'm gonna push past the urge to not be one. that was like they want to be Fox News, you know? Like they've got a guy, he has a tie, they sort of have graphics, even though they look like a kid made them. And he's like, well, you know, he sworn in 10 minutes early, and I'm gonna actually use time on my show to talk about that.
Yeah, it's okay. I always say this too. Whenever someone comes with those, anybody, a lot of times these cable talkers, whenever they come with these like supposed off the cuff comments, like Sean Hannity does, those things are written. They're in a teleprompter. He's reading it. Now, I don't know if the line about, you know, I don't mean to nitpick is in the teleprompter, but you know what was in the teleprompter, because there's images available, is of him complaining about Joe Biden being sworn in 10 minutes early. That was in the teleprompter. That's in the script. You're reading it. So when you say, I don't mean to nitpick, actually, maybe your producer's meant to nitpick. Maybe your news writer meant to nitpick, because someone definitely meant to nitpick because it's in your teleprompter, bro. So all the fakeness about these guys' approaches and their vehement disagreement and a lack of approval for what these guys are doing, it's written, it's pre-screened, and they make sure they're saying a certain thing to a certain audience because they want you to think a certain way. This is not off the cuff.
No, that is how these sorts of shows work. Like we have Marissa's on the call right now. Whatever she puts into my teleprompter, I say. That's it. If I ever say something inappropriate or offensive, it's her fault. So don't message me. But anyway, yeah, and look, it's just it's ridiculous. Like the thing. Thank you, President Trump. And like, I know that some of you are probably thinking, well, why are you showing this? Well, first of all, because it's fun and I need to, my mental health. This is wellness for me in a sick way. But also, they've been beating Fox News in the ratings a number of days recently. There's a very real chance that for the right wing, this is going to become the go-to channel. And so, in the same way that whatever Fox said to them, they believe, there's a chance that, as Reed Ryson points out in a tweet, that dollar store Bill O'Reilly, whatever he says might be what they believe. And we need to know what they believe if we're going to ward against it. So we're going to probably have to check in on Newsmax and hold them accountable and fact check them in the same way we've done with Fox News, because this is how low the bar for right-wing media has become. That they will listen to that, that they will listen to. Did you notice, we played that first video, and they have the little ticker going on at the bottom. One of the things on the ticker, I don't think most people noticed this, was a declassification of Khashoggi report might embarrass, as in the first one, but might embarrass, you're not going to see it because of our lower third. Oh, there you go. Oh, look at him. Let's see, is it coming up? Let's see, we have Trump pardons Judge Jeanine Pirro's ex-husband. That's totally fine. We'll just move on. Release of Khashoggi report could embarrass Saudi prince. Well, no, I wouldn't want that. Like the it's bad enough that he had to murder someone, but now he's going to be embarrassed about it. That's they put that at the bottom. Poor FBS. He might be embarrassed about the fact that we found out about his murder. Really, it's kind of a dick move from all of you in the audience to even be paying attention to that news. You should really look the other way about his assassination. Anyway, well, it's such a joke. It's such a joke.
They don't mean to nitpick, John. It just kind of popped up on the bottom of the screen magically, and no one selected that particular news story. It just comes from the wire and just pops up on the screen.
Just does. We're a little bit over, but I want to do just this one last video. Because this is okay. Members of the right wing are responding to Biden becoming president in different ways. Some are sort of salty and petty, some are angry, some are in denial, saying it's other people's fault. Tucker Carlson is feeling oddly randy about the entire thing, as you'll see.
He will fill the yawning void where our empathy should be. He is medicine. Joe Biden's arms, lean and hard from decades of empathetic labor on our behalf, will encircle us like lights from the Lincoln Memorial. And at that point, well, God knows, anything is possible. If there's a thin bead of sweat forming on your upper lip as you think about all of this, that's okay. Don't feel shame. Shame isn't necessary now. Joe Biden is here.
What? One, I don't watch Tucker Carlson, so one would assume, is this like his fitness segment? Like you watch that, you vomit up all the food you've had all day and you lose weight real fast. What was that we just watched? That was on Fox. That dude makes like $30 million a year. I couldn't see either of his hands during that, so I'm a little bit concerned about what might have been going on. What is wrong with Tucker Carlson?
I've seen him use this kind of ploy before. It's supposed to seem like, you know, of course he's exaggerating, being sarcastic and talking trash about this next guy, or putting these types of thoughts that he's pushing as if this is something that Democrats or even the Biden administration has been saying. I do remember a president when he came in and he kept saying, I alone can help you. I alone can take care of your issues. Only me you need to trust. I alone, I alone, I alone. His name was President Trump. When he came in talking about how awesome he is and how he's the savior, I don't remember Tucker Carlson talking about or exaggerating, because he didn't have to, because Trump exaggerated for us. Exaggerating just how much of a savior he thinks he is and how he's this king. He even said things like that too, along with his supporters. So when we try to blow up this whole insane approach to worshiping a new president, we've already seen it. And you can't outdo what we've already seen and done for the past 4 years from your supporters. So I don't think many people are gonna buy it. I also don't think many of his audience really pick up on what he's doing. I feel like this is one of those things where you thought you had a great writing idea. You're like, I'm gonna write this. And you write it really fast because you had this anger and you have maybe some kind of a emotion built up. I'm gonna write. And after you write it, maybe you wanna take 5 minutes or even a day before you publish it or read it to someone else, because you might have just been emotional at the time. And when you read it out loud, it sounds a bit stupid. Everybody's done it. This isn't just a Tucker thing. Everybody's done it.
I'm sure we have.
Reread what you wrote before, if you do it in a fit of anger, and then make sure that it makes some sense, but it doesn't, or that your approach and trying to sound all artistic doesn't come off stupid.
That's true. Yeah, no, at least take a little bit of time to think about what you've done while serving your sentence in horny prison. Because that was really weird. Anyway.
Because he had no idea that it sounds like that. Because he's too busy, or whoever wrote it, is too busy trying to sound smart and sarcastic. Oh, we slammed him there. Okay. You don't realize how you sound.
Yeah, yeah. Or who you are to be delivering that message. We don't generally talk about IPOs very often here at the Damage Report, but perhaps we should, because a recent report breaking down some of the factors that have gone into what sort of people are launching them and who is not. It's actually pretty fascinating. And joining us now to break it down is the editor-in-chief of Business Insider, Allison Chantel. Welcome to the Damage Report.
Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you here. So what's lacking from this group of recently launched IPOs?
Yeah, women, lots and lots of women. So over 400 companies went public in the US last year, and only about 4 were founded and led by women. And so, you know, that's a pretty steep contrast. And historically, it's not much better. When we pulled data with NASDAQ to look at how many examples we could find of female founders who were able to scale their companies to IPO and kind of maintain CEO as they were going public, that number we could come up with was only about 20. So that's 20 out of thousands of companies that are publicly traded on the stock exchanges. So there's a pretty wide gap between how big a woman can tend to scale their business versus a man.
That's pretty amazing. That historic number almost makes the number for this last year seem not as bad by comparison, but still obviously horrific if you're talking about 1%. So, I know some of this is probably going to go into the area of speculation, but what are some initial potential hypotheses as to why this is?
Yeah, so you know, it's funny you say that about last year. Last year was like exponential growth, I guess you could say, in the chart. Before it was one or two, and actually about 13 of the 20 examples we could find were in the last 7 to 8 years. So I guess things are improving, although we would like to see it improve quite a bit more. So some of the reasons, I think one that is widely discussed is what's going on in venture capital, the fact that there are, you know, of course, more men than women in venture capital seats of power with more capital behind them. That's part of it. And I think if you get more diversity within venture capital, then you can get more diversity around ideas and which ideas are worth backing. Of like the trillions of dollars that are spent in venture capital every year, only about 3%, less than 3% goes to all women founded teams. If you throw a man co-founder in the mix, like a woman and a man, then it increases to about 14%. And then like you don't even want to know for BIPOC women how bad it is, it's less than 1%. So BIPOC women aren't even giving like a single percentage of venture capital dollars. So that's a huge issue. And there's a lot of other reasons you could say, like I think that maybe because part of it's hard to get funding, harder to get funding if you're a woman. Women themselves are pushed to think of ideas that they uniquely can solve rather than solving the biggest problems in the world. And so the ideas probably aren't as big. So you're not, you know, Jeff Bezos wasn't uniquely qualified to start a bookstore online. He just did it, thought it was a huge sector that he should be going after. Elon Musk had no qualification to start, you know, rocket companies or anything like that. But he wanted to tackle giant ideas. And I think we also need more women to just feel more comfortable pursuing these giant, huge ideas that maybe they're not uniquely qualified for, but they want to tackle it anyways.
It also seems like if in venture capital you have so few women represented there, and women are being pushed into working on ideas or solutions or products that are specifically geared towards women, they also might not seem as appealing to a group of investors that don't necessarily know or value that world.
Yep, I think there's definitely a cyclical problem here to some extent.
Now you also mentioned, so part of the problem is the funding. You also mentioned and maintaining CEO after receiving the funding. Is that something that we've seen, that women are sort of being pushed out of leadership roles once that has been passed?
Well, so there's a couple things. One is when we looked at women who were CEOs of companies that they didn't found who were taking companies public, we only found about 9 examples of that. So there's not, even when you're looking at CEO positions of women, whether they founded the company or not, there's not that many examples, at least that are publicly traded currently. I think that if you look at corporate America, about 7% of all Fortune 500 CEOs are women. And often there are studies that show women get kind of put in sometimes a COO position or the number two position, but it's really hard for them to get to that number one position. And it's a little bit yet to be seen if the current ranking class of women who are like the Sheryl Sandbergs, who are, you know, COOs and could probably easily be CEOs in their own right, do make it onto that next step of becoming CEO. Like, will they become the Mark Zuckerberg? I think that's another thing that we hope to see a shift in. But right now, a lot of women are getting stuck in number twos.
Mm-hmm. So we talked a little bit about some of the consequences that could come from more women being represented in venture capital, other than I guess some of the obvious equality benefits to more women receiving funding and leading IPOs. What are some of the other either economic or social consequences that you could see coming from that change?
Yeah, I think that there's a lot. It's not just some moral obligation that women and men should be equal. I think it's actually, Melinda Gates wrote a good book on this called The Moment of Lift. And she, out of all of her research and all of the work she's done, she found that if you just like lift up women in society, it actually lifts up the rest of society around it, creates more economic opportunity and whatnot. So, and there's a lot of studies that also show that companies can run more effectively often when women are in charge, not to say that men are bad leaders, they're often tremendous. But women, for whatever reason, you can see lifts in bottom lines based on different studies, all sorts of kind of economic game just within companies themselves when you have more women in power. So there's good business reasons to do this. It's not just some moral stance, although I agree with that as well.
So look, obviously the numbers in terms of the IPOs, we talked about that they're going up, but they only seem to be going up so much because the basement was so low on that. Does it seem like there is movement in this direction? Are there initiatives that are being worked on that seem to be working to provide more diversity?
I think there's definitely more attention going into it. Like, I think, you know, first I was talking to one other female founder, and she was saying, like, look, first we needed to fill the stadium. We need to get more women in the arena. And we spent, you know, the last decade really trying to advocate for that. And there's more advocating we can do. But like, now that they're in the arena, then we need to get them to like bigger and bigger positions and more capital behind them and things like that. So I think that's the phase of growth that we're in now. One is continuing to encourage women that, you know, entrepreneurship should be a path that more people should consider, especially when you look at, if you want really women to be as powerful as men, look at the most powerful people in the world. One good example of this is the billionaires list that Forbes does every year. All of them are men, or like, and they're men founders specifically, or they were inherited wealth from their dads who are founders or their grandpas who are founders. And so there's this, if you want to reach the same scale of power that men have, you need to build equal wealth if you're a woman. And the only way to do that is to create the next Fortune 500 companies. And so encouraging more women to consider that route earlier, I think, is also important too.
Sort of getting that ambition going at an earlier age, basically.
Yes.
Okay. Well, Allison, really appreciate you joining us on the show today and breaking down this report. Very fascinating, and I appreciate it.
Thank you, John.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.